Believe it or not. The Baker's Broadcast, presented by the makers of Fleischmann's and Yeast on behalf of the 30,000 bakers in the United States and Canada, with Ozzie Nelson and his orchestra, Harriet Hilliard, Shirley Lloyd, and believe it or not, Robert Ripley.
That was the explosion that blew up Charles Simonson.
Charles Simonson?
Yes. Well, Bob Ripley will tell us about him in just a minute.
Jerry Newmark, Ross Knox, Nihisaw, Eromid Lab, Ahip Plenilihip, Wen Choi, Nachsab, Nikan La, Lapple Spock, Lab Rab.
Now, wait a minute, Ben. I give up. What's this all about?
Well, that's one of Bob Ripley's lives, believe it or not, for tonight. But Bob will be here in a moment to explain it all for you. Right now, let's go with some music.
Oh,
revealer of remarkable reality, believe it or not, Robert Ripley.
Who's everybody?
Oh,
everybody.
Hello, Bob.
Say, Bob, what was that explosion that just went off?
Yes, what's it all about?
Well, one cold December day in 1928, a road gang was blasting rock along the banks of the Wisconsin River. After many hours of fruitless labor because of the frozen ground, one of the men approached Charles Simonson, foreman of the gang, who was standing a little way down the road.
Hey, Simonson.
What you doing, Bill?
Just setting some wood for that fire over there.
Fire?
Are you crazy?
Get over there and put it out.
But, Simonson.
You crazy fool. Listen, there's a ton of dynamite laying around here. You want to blow us all to kingdom come?
Listen, Simonson. We moved all the pot out of the way. I set the boxes myself. I tell you, it's safe.
Nothing's safe in this wind. What about those flying spots? If I can put that fire out.
Okay, you're the boss. But I know it's safe. Murder in a box of dynamite within a minute.
Oh, what's that?
Something's wrong. The boys are running out mad.
Look, what's that box over there by the fire? It looks like...
It's dynamite. I thought I moved it all. I thought I...
Oh, I told you this would happen.
It's a spark. They're falling on the box. It's catching fire.
Right.
Come on. Well, let's get out of here.
I'll take it.
Simonson, what are you going to do?
There's 100 sticks of dynamite in that box. Enough to kill us all. I'm going to kill it.
You're crazy. Save yourself while you got a chance. Simonson, come back. The dynamite's going off. Stop him, somebody. Stop him. Don't let him do it. He'll be blown to pieces.
He's pushing up. He's going. He's going.
He hasn't got a chance.
And believe it or not, no one was killed in that explosion. Although 100 sticks of dynamite, enough to blow up a regiment, exploded in Charles Simonson's arms, he is still alive to tell about it. And I want to introduce him right now, the man who lived through that dynamite explosion, Mr. Charles Simonson.
Good evening, everybody.
Gosh, you're certainly lucky to be alive, Mr. Simonson.
Yes, sir. Mr. Simonson's unbelievable experience has left him partially deaf and blind. You know, there's enough power in 100 sticks of dynamite, properly placed, to completely destroy the largest building on earth. But believe it or not, in Mr. Simonson's case, only one of his bones was broken, a bone in the palm of his hand. Is that right, Mr. Simonson?
Right, Mr. Ripley.
You know, you've been luckier than most people. Sometimes the most trivial accident causes the most serious results. Charles Hess of Baltimore laughed so hard that he dislocated his jaw. And Charles Balotonopar sneezed and broke his leg. And Bobby Leach, who went over Niagara Falls in a barrel and lived, was killed by slipping on a banana peel in Australia. And when Julia Hopkins of Gary, Indiana, was taking a bath not so long ago, she slipped on a take-up soap and skidded out of the window and fell three stories.
Well, what happened to her, Bob? Was she killed?
Oh, no. Only embarrassed. You see, and Calcutta, the Greek philosopher, was told that he would die on a certain day. When the day arrived, he was enjoying such good health that he laughed at the prediction, and he laughed so hard that he caused his own death. But you topped them all, Mr. Simonson. Tell me, what do you remember about that accident?
Only that they found the rim off my cap across the river, 600 feet away.
Gosh, Mr. Simonson, I think you're a brave and a lucky fellow. Are you ever sorry you took that wild chance?
Only when I saved.
Only when you saved? Well, I don't care. How's that?
I still have some sandstone in my face. The rain's too.
I bet you never asked the barber for a close shave, do you?
Oh, no. I think it's very much. One is enough.
I agree with you. Thank you very much, Mr. Simonson, for coming here tonight. And I hope you'll stay away from dynamite, because, you know, a dynamite explosion like yours has been known to kill people. Let's finish it all right.
Believe it or not, for tonight.
Then I have two of them for you tonight. Okay. In India, there are nearly 300 million Hindus, and every morning they repeat the same prayer. All life is good, and dead is the great mother of all life. And in Ethiopia, then, the Dalit tribe show their respect for dead in a very picturesque way. They build their temples of worship in the shape of large loaves of bread.
Well, Bob, you've certainly shown us down through the ages and throughout the world. Bread has been recognized as the great life-sustaining food. But it's only been recently that scientists have found out why bread is such a wonderful food. One interesting fact is that bread constitutes one of our most important sources of muscle-building protein. We actually get more protein from bread and other wheat products in our diet than from any other class of food. And these proteins from bread are proteins used by the body for building and maintaining muscle tissue. That's why it's so important for children to eat plenty of bread. It replaces a tremendous amount of energy they're always using up. It also helps them to grow big and strong and firm muscles. It's the proteins that make up the supporting walls of a crumb of bread. And it's this lacy-like, porous structure that makes bread light and fluffy and makes bread so easy to digest. So always have plenty of bread on your table. Encourage your family to eat more of it by serving a variety. Whole wheat, rye, and raisin, as well as white bread. Make bread a part of every meal you eat.
Now, Ozzie, I would like to present a cab recollect to you.
A cab recollect?
Yes, from Washington.
Now, wait a minute. What's this cab recollect business?
Well, I have a cab recollect right here in the studio tonight, Harriet. Mr. Radley.
The dealer, as we say in cab recollect.
So you're a cab recollect. Nice cab.
Yes, you're not. I keep this witness.
And I'm good old-fashioned English?
I said, why, sailor, I speak cab recollect smoothly.
Well, where does a man come from who speaks cab recollect?
Why, he's an American. Believe it or not, he was born in Norfolk, Virginia. And he's not an interpreter.
Oh, come on now, Bob. What's the cab?
Mr. Radman lives in Washington, where every language in the world is spoken. And he got tired of hearing all that confusing gibber, so he decided to invent his own language. And cab recollect was the result. Believe it or not, cab recollect is just English spoken backwards. K-C-A-B is B-A-C-K, back. And recollect is R-E-K-L-A-T, which is the T-A-L-K-E-R, talker. In other words, back talker.
Oh, I see.
So do you talk to yourself, Mr. Ryden, or is there someone who can understand you?
I had a friend who could understand me. We talked it for years in front of people, but they never caught on to what we were saying.
Well, Mr. Ryden isn't the only man who does things backwards. You know, in Japan, they beckon to you when they want you to leave, and they wave you away when they want you to come forward. And if they like you very much, they hit you. In Algeria, they shake their heads when they mean yes, and they nod when they mean no. All you need is practice. You not like, Mr. Ryden?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's nothing. Go ahead, yes, sir.
What did you say?
I said, absolutely, Mr. Nelson. That's all there is to it.
Well, how about Pig Latin? M-K-E-A-S-M-O-A-D-M-I-N-O?
But I don't like it as much as talking backwards.
You never make a good try of it. You know, I think Mr. Ryden would have a little trouble over there. You see, the heathen Chinese is peculiar. He's the backward champion of the world. A Chinaman laughs when he's sad, he cries when he's glad, he wears skirts and his wife wears pants, and he puts his vest on over his coat. He takes off his shoes instead of his hat when entering a house. He scratches his foot instead of his head when he's puzzled. He mounts a horse backwards, rows a boat standing up, and shakes hands with himself when he meets a friend. He wears white instead of black when in mourning, lights fractions upside down, and reads a book backwards.
And from what I've heard of the Chinaman's music, I think he sings backwards too, doesn't he, Bob?
Say, that sounds like a challenge there, Ryden. How about it? Can you sing a song?
Say, what's a knocking there is a big mouth kissing.
What's a knocking? Can that be Mr. Nelson?
That's right. I said if Mr. Nelson will give us some music.
Music doesn't have to go backwards, does it? That's a madman, madman?
Oh, no. Just the words.
Would you like to sing?
Oh,
what would you like to sing?
What is only sure out of the most?
What's that?
Show me the way to go home.
Okay.
What is only sure out of the most? Mid dead, dead, snow, and I'm dead. I got a L to pig, rubber, now you are. I got lost in our shoes, I'm in death. Rest river, I am mayor. We vote now, rah, mayo. Or let your last rest and goodness have a slap. Why has only shot on your mouth?
Thank you very much. That was Mr. Paul Rodman singing, Show Me the Way to Go Home, Backwards. Or I should say, Wohus, M.F. Yaw-Ock, Emo, is a Hootay Road Song.
And that was Mr. Ripley saying, Believe It or Not, Believe It or Not.
I've got those, oh, what a movie got me, got all you do, wave a picture. I've got those, what would you do if you had a word instead of singing a couple of songs? Isn't it funny? It always looks funny on the other side of the street. Everything you do is tough, while the other guy's got this beat. I've got those. Get hot, get and smile, but hey, now you don't think you must be making me. I've got those, you never sing my favorite number, don't you ever play a rumble blues. You understand if my hair turns to gray, or they have to take me away. I've got those, oh, what an easy job you got, all you do is play the fifth
blues. Hey, Ozzy, come on over here and meet some pals, man. We get a real guy. Hey, you don't want it. Just a bum sport. Maybe the end's good enough for you.
Can you stay back in the sky?
Well, I've never had him in the But I've never been to Cupcake, Arizona.
Young man, are you calling me a liar?
I see there, Officer Kello. Can't you play something pretend? Pretend like sitting on the trees or something?
Hello, Archie.
Hello.
What are you saying there over to me for? You don't know me. Say something hot.
Something
hot. Listen, Archie, you want it on the phone?
Yeah, I got a friend who's written a marvelous poem.
You don't look like a picture.
Hey, Archie, you got the cover charges taken off? What I need you a racket you've got.
You understand if my hair turns to gray and they have to take me away. I've got those old and easy jobs you got for you, dear baby.
Hey, Archie,
here he is again, Robert Whitley.
Okay, bye.
Well, you've all been reading about the $27 million collection of paintings that Andrew Mellon has given to the government. Well, the masterpiece of this collection is the Madonna of Alba, for which Mr. Mellon paid $1,156,000. Now, mind you, it is for one single painting. But Raphael, the artist who painted it, only received $1 a day, or a total of $50, for this work. Mr. Mellon paid over $500,000 for another painting, The Annunciation, for which the artist, Van Eyck, received only $2. He paid $200,000 for Durer's Painting of a Young Man, for which the artist received only a dozen oysters for dinner one night. However, if you judge by the size, the most expensive painting of all was a miniature by Holbein, only 1 inch square, with it sold for $25,000. Raphael painted his most famous Madonna on a barrel head, in payment for a 25-cent restaurant bill. And this same painting, Madonna's Appear, is now valued at more than $1 million. But aside from the money value of great works of art, there are many strange stories behind the actual work itself. For instance, the well-known picture of Washington crossing the Delaware was painted by a German living on the bank of the River Rhine. If Washington had tried to use boats of this type, so heavily loaded on the Delaware, he would have drowned his entire army. And this same picture shows the American flag, which, believe it or not, was not created until a year after Washington had made this famous crossing. And this evening, I would like to present a radio sketch about one of the most remarkable pictures ever made, a portrait of the great English writer Henry Fielding, painted by his famous friend, William Hogarth. Let us roll back the years to 1765, when Dick's Coffee House in London was the gathering place for all the celebrities of the day. Here, late one evening, in a corner stall, sat two men listening intensely to a discussion about a
circus. I beg to differ with you, Benjamin. Henry Fielding, God rest his soul, will go down in history as a great dramatist. And in contrast, he wrote some of his greatest lines.
Well, David, I know you're a great friend of Fielding's, but you must admit he was a better novelist than a playwright.
I doubt it.
Well, perhaps you are right. Hogarth used to say the same thing, if you respect your famous acquaintance.
Yes, Hogarth was in my mind. Oft times, while he was alive, he'd confide to me that Fielding was more of a genius than the pen, and Hogarth himself than the brush.
Yes, Hogarth's picture of Fielding proves that.
The picture, gentlemen. There's something very strange about that picture of Fielding.
Yes? What is it, David?
Gentlemen, you believe in ghosts?
Ghosts? Why?
Let me tell you about that picture Hogarth drew of Fielding. It was about 11 years ago, 1754, I believe, when I went round to visit Hogarth in his studio. I found him sitting dejectedly before a blank canvas. The sun was about to set, and the rose and glow smothered along.
Hello, David.
Oh, Master Hogarth, why do I find you so downcast? Is the news forsaking us?
Then you haven't heard about Fielding.
Fielding? He's in Portugal, are you not?
Yes, in Portugal forever.
What do you mean?
Fielding died 4 weeks ago.
Fielding did?
Yes, I just received the news today. A genius is far from our midst, David.
Yes, Fielding.
And in all the years I knew him, I never once drew his picture.
The story you asked him to sit for it?
No, never. It was always about. Right here in this room 100 times a day, and I never asked him to pose for me. I never dreamed that someday he'd be gone forever.
The loss is not yours alone, Hogarth. The whole world is lost, too.
Oh, I only had one picture, just one picture.
two clubs. Games are so hard. These days, please, don't try to control me. I'd rather be left alone. Well, if you wish, my friend, I'll go.
Yes? Come in.
Mr. Hogarth, sir.
Oh, yes, and you?
What is it?
A gentleman to see.
Who is he?
He would give no name. I'm Mr. Hogarth.
Yes?
He holds his cloak before his face in the strangest manner.
I see. Well, having come up.
Yes, sir. Oh, here he is now, Mr. Hogarth.
All right, isn't he? Here we go.
Thank you, sir.
Can I be of any service to you, sir?
No, Hogarth. I have come to be of service to you.
Who are you?
Why didn't you just take this cupboard?
I did not wish to stop you with two sudden appearance.
William, I have come back.
You?
Yes. I am William Fielding.
I am dead.
Yes.
Why do you come back to haunt me?
I do not come to haunt you, my friend. I have come to pose for the picture you want.
No. You have come to pose for me?
Yes.
But how? How can this be?
There are things I cannot reveal to you, William. Be satisfied. I am here. Then you are really a ghost.
Call me what you did.
I can't believe my eyes.
Come, William. I'm only permitted a few hours. So prepare to draw me
at once. Yes, yes. Yes, I draw you.
Oh, this is a miracle.
Yes.
Sit in this chair under the skylight.
That's good.
Now, face to the right, Silver. Let your throat fall back on your shoulders.
Hold out like feverishly for 2 hours to finish the picture we all know so well.
Come now, David. That story is preposterous.
Of course, David, you made the whole thing up.
Gentlemen,
I give you my word, it's the truth. If Hogarth were alive today, he'd back me up.
Unfortunately, he is dead.
But I don't need Hogarth to prove it.
Really?
Yes. I know the story is true because I, David Garrick, played the part of Fielding's ghost myself.
David Garrick, one of the greatest actors the world has ever known, but such an amazing performer that he posed as Fielding's ghost, and the famous painter Hogarth really thought he was drawing his dead friend. The picture that Hogarth made at this time is still in existence.